Let me, double check over here, make sure that's all good. You guys, Cody and Dan, you hear us all right on the phone there?
Yes.
All right. I think we're gonna, I think we're ready when you are, JT, yeah?
Okay, can you hear me okay, Andrew?
Yep, yep.
Okay. Well, thank everyone for coming today. Appreciate seeing everybody again. And, we'll, get forward here, today with the, Shellfish, meeting. It's, July 20th, 2023, and this first
interview, I guess, for approval of agenda. Yep, yep, that'd be good. Yep.
All right, Chair, we take a motion for approval of the agenda.
Okay, have a motion.
Okay, have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion is second. Any discussion? No further discussion. I guess we'll put it for a vote, Andrew, okay?
Yes, that would be good, Dick.
Just a hand vote?
Yeah, that works, or if there's any opposition or opposed or whatever you want to do there.
All those in favor of approval of the agenda as written, say aye. Opposed? Okay. Approval of the agenda is passed, Andrew.
All right.
Okay, now we'll move forward to the minutes. Ask for a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting. Okay, we have a motion, like a second. Okay, we have a second on it. Any discussion? Okay, no discussion. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, say no. Okay, motion passed. Approval of the minutes are set forth, Andrew. And, yes. Matt, it's up to you. A review of the 2023 replenishment project.
Okay, I think maybe just before we get into that, maybe do a quick down the line introduction for the record there. And I guess just so folks know, there's been some changes there. So JC there is now the advisory committee chair. Richard Green is no longer on the advisory committee, and we thank him for his many years of long service, and also. John D. Maria is no longer on the advisory committee, and we have a new member here, Mr. Deal. So, and that's the current makeup, and I'll turn back over for introductions there.
Okay, don't you want Sean?
Toby Keller, Weems, Virginia. Ben Johnson, Suffolk.
Beverly Ledford, Virginia Beach.
Richard Harding, Reedville, Virginia.
Jason Hudgens, Matthews.
Ernie George, Waystone.
Lee Deal, Heatsville, Virginia.
John Ward, Sykes.
Peyton Mason, Gloucester.
Okay.
I believe we have Mr. Dan.
Dan Dowley, Tangier.
Hey, Dan. Who else forgot him?
Go ahead, Cody.
Cody Metcalf, Eastern Shore.
Okay.
I think that's all we have on the phones there.
Okay.
All right. I guess if you're ready to go, I'll just do a quick review of just kind of the replenishment that we've done so far this year. And then, you know, try to kind of have a free-flowing discussion there of the 2023-2024 season plans. And just so we're up front, I'd like to try to have another meeting, ideally that first week in August sometime between now and that August commission meeting to sort of finalize anything. So we're going through the sort of discussion today. If there's any information that you'd like staff to come back with at that meeting or anything else, try to take notes and keep track of that, and we'll try to put everything together and kind of finalize any discussions that we're having today. So That I'll go ahead and give a quick overview of where we are on replenishment. So we accomplished the proposed seed planting this spring. So we planted approximately 15,000 bushels of seed from that place that was planted in the Nansman Ridge area specifically for these projects, I guess going on 4 or 5 years now. And the seed was moved to, I guess it should be 20,000 bushels, excuse me, approximately 10,000 bushels to the upper Rappahannock areas primarily 7 and 8, and a little piece of area 6 as well. And then 5,000 bushels, little shy of 5,000 bushels into areas 9 and 10 in the Pocomoke Sound area off Saxis Island there. And then a little bit less than 5,000 bushels to the Cone River area there in the Potomac tributary. So that was done this spring. And then we just have wrapped up the majority of our shell planting. We have a few house shells that we're still going to get overboard, hopefully here soon. But the majority of that 500,000 bushels planted this year has been the reef shells from that fossil shell deposit in the lower James River. And those have been planted in the Rappahannock, about 120,000 bushels or so. Our 100,000 bushels there, about 120,000 bushels in the Pocomoke, and the remainder in the James River hand scrape areas, and all of the going on hand scrape bottom. We've been working on previous stone planting projects as well, but those were sort of approved as part of previous replenishment plans, but those are wrapping up in the York River and getting ready to start in the Mobjack Bay on those areas that are closed to harvest. That's where we are on replenishment. And if there's any questions on specifics on that, I'd be glad to address them now or take any questions on what we've been doing with our time this spring and in summer there.
On your shells you put in the buffer, where did you put those
at? The area that were most in need were, I guess you call it, trevices there up closest to the Maryland line in area 13. And then we did a sort of light sprinkling, not our full, usually target about 1,000 bushels per acre on areas that are really in need, but on Shell Rock, we sort of went probably in that 600 bushels per acre range. And then we did the other half of Island Rock, which is that new area that we started last year.
How about blackberry and grape conch?
We didn't plant any in blackberry. Looking back, we had already expanded, I guess, last year, I think, that area there. And we only had a small amount sort of set aside for that area, and sort of economics and logistics didn't really make sense to send just a piece of a barge there. So those were rolled into the other areas for planting there. Yeah, again, yeah, and those areas were less in need than those areas that were planted there.
Andrew, what did we pay for the shell?
It ranges a little bit depending on the area. In the James, it's in that $3 range, and other areas further away, it's in the $4 range.
Okay. Yes. So I guess this pretty much took all our money that we had.
Yeah, that was about $2.3 million went under that, and the rest, close to the rest, is going to house shells. We like to keep a little bit of balance in that, so we can start earlier in the spring if there's any replenishment funding as well. Yep.
What does it cost for a seed of the Pocomoke?
That this year it was a little bit over $7, I want to say, per bushel, caught, transported, and planted up there. Plus, you know, if you count the cost of the dread shell on the planting side, which was around $3 a bushel. So the total cost of the project, if you count the shell that was planted initially, is probably $10 per bushel for that reef shell plus the transporting once it struck with seed.
Yeah, I think the Potomac, I think they were looking at around $14 up there. Pretty expensive to get it up there.
Yeah, I think we were able to move that. Again, it wasn't private ground or public ground seed. It's that house shell or that, reef shell, and the areas in the Potomac were in that $7 range as well. For planting those areas. I can give you closer numbers if you want any specific areas.
South Andrews.
Pardon?
James, are we going to discuss that any today?
We could discuss that if you'd like to add that as an agenda item. I don't think there's any proposed changes on the staff side for that from a resource concern. Just so you're aware, the numbers on that are looking steady or improving since we've made those quota adjustments, shifting to a separate fall quota and a separate spring quota. We did just exceed our spring quota this year by about 1,000 bushels, so right at like 61,000, but not much over that. And we didn't meet the fall quota. I'm not sure 100% what the demand for out of state will be this fall, but there may well be some. But again, not all of that was caught in state last year, and out of state didn't start till the end of the spring season this year. Any other questions about replenishment this year? All right.
I guess, Andrew, as far as survey-wise, we haven't done a whole lot with that. We've done a little spot checking.
We did resurvey areas 1, 2, 4, 7, and 8 in the Rappahannock, and resurveyed area 13 or Shell Rock and Trevices and 9 and 10 off Saxis this spring, but we haven't done any more extensive surveys since then on any of the other areas.
Are y'all going back this fall and doing any?
Yes. Now we'll be doing the in conjunction with our colleagues at VIMS, our annual survey will be starting early October and into September in the usual areas there. And that's usually completed by, we shoot for Thanksgiving. So by the end, by mid-December, we should have that data available for any management changes mid-season if need be.
Okay. Any questions from anyone on the committee so far? Okay.
All right.
I guess that's good.
Okay. And again, we're not looking for any action or anything at this meeting. Just if there's any discussion, it doesn't always have to be one way. You guys can talk amongst yourselves and anything too. So.
Going to the public harvest season, 2023-24 public oyster harvest season.
All right. So what I'll do, I'll just do a kind of quick overview of some areas. I have more slides if there's any questions on specific areas, stock assessment, just sort of give you some quick background on harvest numbers, harvest seasons, what past seasons have looked like, and then kind of open it up for you all to discuss and ask questions to me and each other, and try to have a discussion on it. And then if there's any action items on the end that you'd like staff to come back with in terms of providing more information, we'd be glad to look at that, put those together, and try to get those to you prior to a next meeting so you have time to discuss them, and then hopefully we can come back together again in early August and finalize anything that we're discussing today. So I'll start unless there's any questions on that from here with sort of an overview of harvest, where we've been, where we are. So I kind of expanded this map a little bit to capture sort of the last time we saw harvest as high as they are now, which was in that 86-87 time period. So you can see things weren't particularly great in the 90s until here fairly recently. And we actually had a record harvest, the highest it's been since that 86-87 season on public ground of a little over 300,000 bushels for the first time since then. So that is, it was a long time to get the resource to that condition. And as you can see, it doesn't always stay in that condition. But I think overall, you know, we've seen the resource increasing at the same time harvest has been increasing, but we did harvest close to 100,000 more bushels in this past harvest season off public ground than we had in the previous seasons, but that was primarily by intentionally harvesting less prior to that and now intentionally harvesting more, particularly with the season extensions that we saw this past season. Just to sort of give you an idea of tributaries of where this harvest is coming from, this is just going back to 2016 and sort of shows you the rough breakout of the major oyster producing areas for public ground. So this is just public ground. You can see the James River and the Rappahannock and the Tangier Pocomoke Sound are where a large portion of these oysters are coming from, and there's definitely different reasons, as we all know, for that. But that's sort of the breakdown on the areas that are producing oysters here in the last few years. Again, just a breakdown by gear, just going back to 2018, which is when we started opening some of these other areas that had been in other gear types to hand tongs and scrapes. So you're seeing this breakdown since 2018. Still, oyster scrapes are producing approximately 60% of the oysters. Ordinary oyster dredges, Pocomoke Sound area is 20%. Patent tongs are producing about 9%. And hand tongs and grabs, 12%. And this is just market oysters. And again, as we all know, the majority of harvest areas are opened up acreage-wise to hand scrape and dredge, and there's actually fewer areas open to these other gear types. But that's sort of the breakdown of where those are coming from. And I don't want to belabor these harvest graphs or, density graphs too much. Again, if we need to get into specific areas, we can. Be glad to answer questions on it, but I'm sure this committee has seen for a long time those spat plot graphs that I show with 10 liters of brown shell being sort of a magic number. That's also the oyster density where there's enough oysters on the bottom where you can fish them with less efficient gears. So usually an area can be hand-tonged with 10 market oysters per square meter or about 5 or more for patent tongs. Hand scrapes and dredges can fish in areas and still make very good day's work with densities below that. Fortunately, on a bay-wide scale, we're seeing all of our areas now, again, market oysters are in green, are actually on a bay-wide level up over that 10 markets per square meter, which is the best, just about the best they've been ever, as well as a lot of these small oysters are going to be market size now this year. So this data is from fall of 2022 primarily that we're going to be looking at today. So many of these smalls that were on the just under 3 inches have likely grown are now above that 3 inches, as well as some spats now getting into small. But that's sort of on a bay-wide snapshot of where we are. And this, in most areas and most places, there's a few exceptions that this is what the oyster condition is looking like. So almost all areas have higher densities of market oysters, higher densities of small oysters, and more brown shell on the bottom than they have in the last 20 years, which is in part, I think Dan was quoting some various proverbs the other day, but I think this committee and this commission has done a good job setting the table with both the replenishment effort and the management strategy. So that combined with the natural occurrence of good spat sets and oysters living has put us where we are today. So a little kudos to this committee and the commission for setting the table to allow this to be the condition of our resource today, which is always good to have more oysters rather than less. Were there any questions on that sort of broad overview before move on to looking at the seasons from last year as a starting point? Okay. So on the left-hand side, this was the season that was approved in August by the commission for last year as a starting point. And this graphic on the right was what ended up coming out after one emergency season extension at a public comment period in January, and then a scheduled public hearing in February to extend the season. So the season was extended on a number of areas by nearly a month, and in some areas by 2 weeks. And that was sort of the strategy that we had agreed at a committee level last fall to take, is to look at areas after the harvest and then come back later in the year to come up with a discussion of any potential season extensions. I think we were intending to do that once, and we ended up doing it twice, at least on a staff level. But again, that's something that would be good to finalize, at least on the committee's opinion, on when we would like to have that discussion so that staff can be prepared for a scheduled public hearing rather than by acting through emergency regulatory changes, would be the staff preference. But again, here is the season from last year, and you can see we had approximately 5 months of what initially we had 4.5 months of hand scrape and dredge season, so basically open large harvest going on. You can do the math on what that equates to, but 200 boats roughly catching 16 bushels a day is about what you anticipate harvest side of things. So each week of harvest, we're at the point where we pretty much know as a committee, I think, and at staff level, that the number of oysters harvested is dictated by the length of the season and not the resource, which is a good place to be. But also, you know, we've set the table now, so we can unset it if we over harvest. So that's something to sort of be aware of. And just as an overview on that shell planting, I think our colleagues at VIMS are working on a more in-depth comparison of areas in shell planting over time. But on areas that are open to hand scrape, roughly in the last 6 to 10 year time frame, we've been planting about 2 bushels of shell for every bushel harvested off these areas to keep the resource growing to the condition it is today. That hasn't been the case in all areas, but sort of on average, if we're harvesting 200,000 bushels off scrape areas, we've been planting 400,000 bushels to maintain them at that ideally 10 liters of brown shell volume or over 5 liters. I guess what you're looking at here would be the 2020-2021 season. And you can see this was the last time, at least in the Rappahannock, when we were on a similar rotation schedule with Area 1 in Patentong for the first time. And this was what the season looked like there. This was what the season looked like in the James. A little bit different this year is Great Wacomico Area 1 and Pocomoke Tangier Sound Area 1 would be on the rotation. York River Area would be scheduled to be York River Area 2 would be on the rotation there as well. So that's a little bit different, but this was what the Rappahannock season looked like. 2022 season, again, you can see this was a different rotation, and these were the seasons that we had then. So this was 2023. This was after the extension. These were the last couple years. And you can see this harvest was primarily related to having those shortened seasons. You know, we had 12 weeks of oyster harvest, sort of with multiple areas open to scrape or dredge, roughly in this time period, and we had 18 or 19 in this time period, and that's why that public ground harvest increased, just for comparison, so you have it. And again, 2022-2023 numbers are preliminary. This is a harvest off private ground in that same time period. So again, the resource has been going up, our harvest has been going up, but also our effort in the last year has been increased about 50%, and that's where that both we had the resource there, it was available, and the commission and this committee decided that it would be appropriate to harvest that resource, and that's available there again this year. Were there any questions on that sort of overview of harvest there? And I can give you a quick rundown next, just so it's coming up of our post-harvest surveys that we conducted in those other areas. I'd be glad to pause there if there's any discussion or questions.
Andrew, you talked about 2 bushels of shell for every bushel caught. Yeah, that's still not bad, is it?
No, it's still a pretty good return on investment.
$8 investment by the state and state forces are $40, $50, whatever. I mean, that's still, you know, I go back to the seven, every dollar spent, it's worth seven, you know, it's pretty close.
Yep. And that also includes, we're not catching every single one of those oysters.
Right.
So the resource is still growing at the same time that we're planting that.
Do you have it broken down in, you know, in the Rappahannock or Pocomoke or James River, do you, what area, what's been harvested off of what area?
Yeah, I can show that. I'll get to that here in a little bit, but if you want, I can go through a couple more slides and I can sort of show you a breakdown of some of where that harvest is coming from. Yep.
Someone over here. Colin?
I was just going to comment one slide back. I guess that either one of those, well, that one, more importantly, the most important thing that I take away from that is those previous years, 16, 17, 18, up through 20, typically when we got to the end of the rotation or the end of the season, we were at or barely catching limit at the time, whereas the 22, 23 number, I mean, I never saw certainly 9:30 to 10 with a limit. So the other thing I think takeaway is about that 18 or 19 when we saw the harvest start to fall some when we did away with the 24 bushel limit and went with the two. I think that was important both in this number and also stabilizing the market, keeping prices up. So I think that was a huge move that the commission and this committee made at the right time.
Yeah, and I think Tommy, I think one thing too that made a big difference was about that time, about 2018, when this committee and the shellfish division decided that we thought the best way was to try to split areas up and split that fleet up, you know. And I think that shows in that, it shows the difference in it there. And I think that's a very important point too.
I think you can really see here in that 2018 time period, after that sort of season, you really see phenomenal spat set and these smalls taking off. And then now we're, there's always that sort of year delay that you see with spat becoming smalls and then markets or smalls becoming markets. And you're sort of seeing that come through in our data right now with the harvest areas in good condition and folks being able to leave areas in better shape at the end of the season than 10 years ago they were at the beginning of the season, which is something
good to see. And we also had a fresh head in that, that it could have probably been even higher had we, I mean, we don't know what the circumstances were behind it, whether it helped us improve what it would have been, but we did experience a pretty significant fresh head in that time frame as well.
Andrew, what would you say your goal is as far as exploitation rate on oyster rock? If you go and survey a rock and it's got X amount of bushels on it, and we work it for 2 months or 3 months, and you go and resurvey and it's got X amount of oysters on it, I mean, what would you think would 50% exploitation rate or more or less or what?
It definitely depends on, really there's sort of more of a threshold there that we don't want to get below, and that's sort of 5 liters of shell volume or ideally 10 liters. And it really kind of depends on how much of a buffer that you have there.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, you know, if you have 10 liters and we're planting every time, you know, that's okay. But in areas where you have 14 liters of brown shell volume, you know, we're not wanting to harvest, you know, 50% would knock that down considerably. You'd be down at 7 liters. So probably in that 10 to 15% lane, if you're not going to be planting shell back, is sort of a place that's okay to be, particularly if you have small oysters behind it that you're not harvesting. So it's.
So typically you wouldn't manage for market size, you would manage more for the brown shell?
I think the market size is going to fluctuate based on spat set 2 years ago, but
right.
We know we're not going to get it if the brown shell isn't there. Yep.
Okay.
And I'll run through these next ones pretty quick, and that might give some more information for discussion. These are the post-harvest surveys. we've done in the Rappahannock and a few other areas. Just so what you're looking at here is on the left-hand side is our fall patentong survey, and this is the spring or post-harvest season survey, so early spring, late winter. This was area two after that extension, so you can see prior to harvest, brown shell volume was up over 10. Markets were the highest they've ever been, close to 30 markets per square meter and a considerable amount of spat. And after just shy of 3 months, this area had 10 spat per square meter. Again, a number of those smalls were also no longer there. Many of them likely reached that market size, but again, down below 10 there. Markets are still pretty good there, so there's still some markets left. That brown shell volume, which is what we sort of manage on there, is down below that sort of target where we like to have it. But you know, still not the worst. But again, this area we did have to, based on this resurvey, we came back and replenished it this year. So this area took close to, I can tell you right there. About 30,000 or so bushels of shell went into this area this year. What we're looking at here is the fall 2022 survey data right here with the patentong on the regular, and this is spring 2023, the post-harvest survey there.
That's area two.
Yep, area two in the Rappahannock, so sturgeons, Bush Park, those areas there. Again, we did come back this summer and replenish these areas. Rappahannock Area 4 was, again, in the fall. So this was Coratomin drumming ground area there. And this was the fall survey, I guess, prior to harvest. And you can see this area actually had one of the highest spat sets we've seen. Double check with Missy, but maybe ever in this area. I mean, there were some areas, Ferry Rock, that's had very high spat sets, but on average, the upper Rappahannock was particularly good. And prior to harvest starting, we had small oysters, you know, record numbers there, 50. You know, we're up over 20 in terms of markets per square meter, and brown shell volume was over 10. This committee did recommend, and the commission took action on closing this area somewhat early last year. So we shaved about, I think it was close to 2 weeks off the season there. And this survey was conducted just prior to, I think, about one more week of harvest being conducted there. And you can see again, the brown shell volume is right around 8 right now. So above that 5-liter threshold where we don't like to be, but not quite where we would. And again, this includes some areas that are still better than this, as well as areas that are a little worse. So the drumming ground offshore and inshore were in better condition. They're bigger areas than some of the areas further up the Coratomin, where we likely try to put a few shells still this year.
Do you expect, Andrew, after the growth this summer and spring, which has been phenomenal, this would you be surprised if it were back where you started by now?
It would definitely, the spat aren't going to be there, and a number of smalls were already gone. So it's definitely going to be better likely than it was, but it would be hard to say without a resurvey. So there's definitely going to be some improvement for sure. I'm not sure it would be fully back to where it was prior to harvest without any. Maybe some of the areas would, and likely some wouldn't, I guess.
Andrew, I think one thing to note over here, this was 45 days, mid-October to the end of November, when the whole oyster street fleet were, this particular area right here was the only place open. So that's, you know, one of the reasons for the low numbers there. I think, you know, my opinion of it, you know, it was hit pretty hard.
I think there were other areas open at time. I guess it was only area.
I said, Drew, it's not Pat Dong. I know that was open, yeah.
Yeah, no, Area 4 was open concurrently with the James River, Patton Tom areas.
Yeah, I'm talking about Rappahannock.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, it was only area open in the Rappahannock.
Right.
So that was, we're on Area 4 there. We did resurvey Pocomoke Sound, and this is just Shell Rock, and Area 9 and 10 as well, post-harvest. And again, this area was in better condition than it had ever been. So market's up over 25 per square meter, and this was an area that held, Dan can jump in there, or Don was there, close to 60 boats pretty much the whole season.
Over 60 at times in Pocomoke. Mm-hmm. Shell Rock.
And still, one of the things that I can show you in some separate slides, after that, you know, 3 months, 60 boats working on it, we did leave most of that area on average in better shape than it has been, you know, in previous opening conditions. But you can definitely tell that this area had been worked. But again, you know, the markets did get knocked down, that brown shell did get knocked down, but they've been growing since then. We did come back and replenish the areas that were most in need, so we broke it down into rock by rock and area by area and just came back and sort of did some targeted replenishment in this area. So it held up till the very end. You can definitely tell it had been worked, but it was left, again, as thanks Tommy touched on, in better shape than a lot of times it would be in opening days.
Some years I've seen it open.
Mm-hmm. Area 7 and 8, so these are areas that have seen some pretty recent intensified replenishment efforts. So we used to just move a small amount of seed up there. I guess 3 years ago now, we started planting some shell and got pretty lucky with shell plantings last year and saw some of the highest spat sets we've seen in the upper Rappahannock, I think going all the way back to some locations, 1947. 1947. So we kind of hit the shell planting lottery on the shells that we put up there, and we were able to take pretty good advantage of that. And again, this is a good growing area, so we'll likely have with those fat sets, as long as we're not taking too much of that shell away, there should be oysters there for a number of years based on those fat sets, knock on wood, all the other things that can sometimes happen. But we're in pretty good standing in these areas and upriver as well. And again, you can see these are areas that we've been doing a little bit different management strategy on. So we've been heavily replenishing these areas with both shell and feed. So I think 3 years now, these areas combined have had roughly 10,000 or more bushels of seed planted on them, as well as increased shell plantings. And we've kind of seen both that natural recruitment and all of those factors combined to sort of really see these areas take off in recent years. And even after a month-long season in 7 and 8, again, a lot of those spat had turned into smalls by the spring, and there were actually we saw that increase in some of the brown shell volume and market size oysters. And there is some variability, some error to the survey, but in general, it's at least as good as it was prior to harvest, again, just having a month-long season on average. There are some areas where you could definitely see there'd been some pretty intense effort, but across the whole harvest area that we surveyed, even after that this harvest season, which again wasn't 3 months or 2 months, it was just a month in each area with other areas being open at the same time. So I'll just real quick, while that's fresh in our heads, do a quick scroll back so you can see too far that area 7 and 8 overlapped with area 4 there, so that's, you know, there was overlap and it was a shorter season.
Another comment that you made on that 7 and 8, that was for the past 2 years we've done that. That's been the best quality oyster that we've had on the Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, and Virginia boat. It's besides the state. seen, and it's also producing an outstanding quality product.
I agree. And not only that, I mean, they've ordered them, was done different from the first day they started to the last day, same time.
Yeah, I had a happy shot.
Yeah. And then this is the other area. Were there any other questions on that before I move on there? Okay. And this is area one in the Rappahannock again. So this is the area that's been open every year to Pat and Tong since 2018 with no rotation, and has also had no inputs shell planting wise since planting or after the scrape season in these areas. And this area, other than spat turning into smalls and there being more markets and brown shell, other than the spat having grown, this area is roughly about as good or better on the last day of the season as it was on the first day there, with over 25 markets per square meter and no need for any shell planting in this area as well. And again, this area was open to a different gear type, but no rotation, no harvest, different gear type, but no harvest rotation there.
Did you have the harvest numbers yet on what came off of that?
Uh-huh, at least preliminary, yep. So I can jump around a little bit there if
no,
we want.
You got to get to it. That's
fine. Okay.
Andrew, how do you explain that? How do you work area 4 months with 30 boats and you finish with as good horses, as many horses as you did when you started, you know? It just seems like it's possible, you know? And I guess one thing I've heard a lot is quality, you know, how get a lot of horses, sometimes you don't get the best quality of them, you know. Mm-hmm. That's been some concern.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a different gear type, so it's much less efficient than, I guess, in terms of being able to work low density areas, so the Pat Tongs versus, well, you gotta work both. But again, it doesn't, I guess, necessarily break the area up as much. Mm-hmm. So some of the brown shell isn't subsiding into the mud likely. It's a different level of effort, so it's more spread out, and you're not as likely.
I don't think you catch a lot of the horses that's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming 3 foot instead of, you know, a quarter of a mile.
Well, I think just if you see the, I guess, folks that drop a dredge buoy and work in that same area until everything's gone and move the buoy with a Pat and Tong. I mean, I'll leave it to you two to describe the different fishing techniques, but you generally don't. You guys, if you want to describe how the difference between Pat and Tonging and dredging, you've done more of it than I have. So,
pretty much Pat and Tong leaves everything where you got it from. Dredging and carries it all wherever they go. And some of them. Unless you bring the dirt to bottom. I don't know.
I think we've been seeing it there in the data anyway, that just this area hadn't needed it. But that's sort of the difference, and that's the good news. And again, a lot of these boats that may have been patent tonging, if this area wasn't open, would have been in area 4 or area 7 and 8. So I think that's another potentially good decision that this committee and the commission has made, is to have different areas all producing oysters that open to different gear types and spreading that effort out. So I think that's something that we've done intentionally over the last 6-7 years now.
How many boats were on area 1 consistently? 40? You said 40, 30?
I would say my average 30 through the whole year.
Average 30?
Yeah. Sometimes it might have been 40 or 50, and other times it might have been 20.
And this year the weather was really good. They had,
we didn't miss a day.
And a few went up in early 2, you know, and worked a little bit, but, you know, just because they could catch the limit quicker than what they can find out.
And we've done some comparisons, or our colleagues at VIMS have, on sort of meat weight. And I think, again, it's talking about the quality of oysters there. And I think, sort of put it in layman's terms, there's just as many good oysters, quote unquote, good oysters. So marketable oysters, not necessarily market size oysters there, but there's probably more market sized oysters that aren't marketable. So you can, for lack of a better word, you can throw a lot of trash that's still legal in some of these areas, whereas in area 7 and 8, there's a much lower density. So you can get a quick limit with a more marketable oyster in those areas. So there's probably just as many, if not more, marketable oysters here, but they're a lot more mixed in, small oysters, fat oysters, and oysters that aren't as marketable but might be legal.
What was caught off area 1? I didn't hear you. I thought Tommy, I asked you. I didn't hear a number.
I haven't gotten there yet there, Dan. Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
So is the takeaway from that last comment that if I had shallow oysters of equal quality, that the meat is the same in both of those?
Based on meat conditions, in terms of the dry meat weight from areas, deep rock oysters, area oysters in area 1, oysters further up the river that, you know, depending on if you control for the size of the oyster, the meat quality has been similar in terms of the actual meat weight. So I'm not sure how that equates to the shucking difference on size of things, but you could probably give me a pint difference number between those oysters. But in terms of the actual meat controlled for size, they're comparable, I guess.
I wouldn't quote that study a lot. we were seeing oysters at Christmas that were 5 inches out of area 1 that you could read a newspaper through. When you shut the meat, you could actually were translucent see through it at the same time. 4 and in the well, it was 2 then, and 7 and 8 were.
And again, there's going to be different quality, different years, and this was sort of 1 year. But
I mean, that's a struggle to market oysters out of. And it's one thing that is worrisome is it's gotten the quality of the actual meat has gotten worse, you know, over the last few years, and that could be anything. I mean, it could
that's
be salinity, like it could
well,
be
too.
These huge fat sets, it could be anything, but I see just in the field, in the shucking field, we see a tremendous difference in the meat quality of deep rock and in 1 versus anything else really that we buy on the bay, especially deep rock.
Yeah. Well, I remember when deep rock was the best.
I know.
So years ago,
had a lot of strike too.
Years ago, they were huge. I mean, that's what they wanted.
Well, and
back in the '70s and '80s.
Again, it's in many cases the area 7 and 8 oysters are likely older oysters, can be part of it, especially on deep rock. Some of those oysters that are market size and look pretty might not be. You know, there was some mortality there, and that struck up, and it's now grown. So it really depends on the individual oyster. And probably a specific area on a specific rock.
You go up the river, they all pretty much single as color.
I'll put it to you like this. When we shuck area 7 and 8, nobody's in the bathroom or in the bathroom. When we shuck area 1, there's a line in the bathroom. When they 7 and 8, I think we have to give them diapers because they never get out. Just to give you an idea.
Just like at the bank, go where the best interest rate is.
Well, I'll run through these really quick and we can come back to them. But again, that sort of overall snapshot that I showed you is going to look like almost every area that's scheduled to be on the rotation or isn't in the rotation, with market oysters and brown shell pretty close to that 10 markets per square meter or 10 liters. So on average, the scrape areas in the James, Rappahannock, you know, most of those areas, if you look at the whole river today, are doing pretty good. Area 7, we already talked about. This is just a fall survey prior to harvest. Area 8, again, there is a little bit difference when you're looking at some of these the scales on the axis there. So area 7 and 8 are just lower density areas, but again, you can see that SPAT set that we got in 2022 in area 7. That's the highest we've ever seen during the Patentong survey, and in many areas the highest we've ever seen on the dredge survey, which was conducted, you know, in some locations going back to 1947. This is a lot of shale that we put up there, you know, close to 100,000 bushels or more over the last 2 years. They got a phenomenal SPAT set. Area 6, there was a little bit of mortality on some of the deeper areas there in Area 6, but almost every single one of those oysters that, died did see, you know, 140 little baby oysters growing in a shell or more, or excuse me, across that whole square meter. And the number of small oysters is still high, and likely many of those are now market size. And again, the markets are, pretty close to where they've been prior to openings in previous years.
Was it been 3 years on that?
Yeah, yeah. York River, again, a little bit different scale, but up over 12, 14, 15, 16 markets per square meter across the whole area. York River Area 1 or Pages would be the area that could be on the rotation this year. It has been open to hand tonging for the last 2 years. So there could be some discussion on, that if the committee wants to take that up. The York River hand tong area, which has sort of been taken out of the rotation there in the York River, or Aberdeen Rock, again, is looking pretty good this year as well. Mobjack isn't scheduled to be on this rotation. There's been a lot of discussions about the what to do with the mobjack, but just for folks to have if we need it. Again, this area was open not last year, but the year before. But there is still, you know, it's still about as good as it is on, the first day of the season here as it is after that harvest 2 years ago. So we haven't seen any oysters decline there recently, except due to, that harvest season likely. Deep Rock, again, you can see the densities over the last 3 years and in all 3-4 years in all size classes are really, going up. There was some mortality, I think, in that 2019-2020 time period on some of those larger market size oysters, and we got a really strong SPAT set on those. And again, I've seen a lot of that SPAT translate into small oysters and larger market size oysters. So again, a lot of those legal size oysters on Deep Rock last year were only 2-year-old oysters, and they're likely 3-4-year-old oysters there now. Blackberry, again, one of those areas that isn't in a rotation. It did get some replenishment 2 years ago now, where we expanded a little bit on this year. Great Wicomico Area 1, so Area 2 was open last year. And again, you can see this area did have a, pretty strong SPAT set last year. And again, the market oysters are close to 10 and lots of small oysters that'll probably bump up that market numbers. Tangier, Pocomoke Area 1. So you can see it's likely going to be in the, best condition it's been in a long time. I do want to note for Dan and Don that prior to harvest last year, the Pocomoke Sound and Tangier Sound areas combined had more than 20 markets per square meter, and now we're at about half that, but that's still twice as good as it usually is. So not quite as good as Shell Rock. I don't know that we're going to necessarily see that every year, but still better than it has been in a long while. And again, that's just to, put things on there. That's sort of where we were roughly in this rotation cycle last year when, or in the 2020-2021 time period there.
Question. The shell springs in Great Wicomico, or just what you're seeing so far, are they anywhere near what we saw last year?
They started about mid-June, and I had a couple of really good weeks, and now it completely pretty much stopped. mainly because I think, which it's been doing that for the last few years because the temperatures get high and the oysters basically, I mean, the temperatures get high and the DO has been the most, but I mean, I would say that we're probably on par, it's maybe not quite as high as we've seen, but like it's been pretty good for the last decade and a half. And I think, and now I also, they started in the Piankatank and they're kind of in the James River, they started taking off too. So, but I think this is going to be pretty on par with what we've gotten used to seeing over the last decade to a decade and a half. But that doesn't always translate to the bottom,
sure.
Unfortunately. So, but they're out there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to bring it up. I worked on Great River Commons. I don't know if y'all keep your strings out how long, but we must have had a set in like November.
We had a very, very late set last year. Actually, that, you know, the one graph that he showed with Area 4 in the Rappahannock, the spat, like at most of the spat that we were seeing when we went back were actually spat that we didn't even count in that. Like, I distinctly remember Jim being like, these are too small, I'm not counting them. Like, 1-2 millimeter oysters in October. And then when we went back in January, they were 5-10 millimeters. So yeah, they set into, easily into October, November last year. But we only, I mean, we pretty much, our shell shrink season goes from mid-May through the first part of October. And, I mean, we kind of look at the same window every year. So we, in years like that, we don't catch the end of the spawn, that last spawn in the fall, just because we don't have that to keep it up. Because we move on to other things.
That doesn't happen very often, that late fall.
It depends. I mean, it's been happening more often. Like, the oysters, that they've had an expansion in terms of when they set. Like, we typically get an early set, and then they kind of stop in the really hot couple months or a couple weeks in July, and then they might start back up and go into, you know, late September, October, November. And, I mean, going back looking at some of the shell strings from the 70s, 60s, like, we would occasionally get, because they expanded it, and they would continue it until they stopped setting, and sometimes they'd go into October. So it's not that uncommon, but I think it's becoming more common as temperatures are increasing.
I agree.
And is that sort of a pre-Agnes, post-Agnes phenomenon, is that right? That's sort of prior to...
It all depended on the year. I mean, I would have to go back and look at some of the old data, but I mean, I know that, like, they definitely had weeks where they were going, or years where they were continuing the shell strings into late October, because they were still getting spat on them.
Thank you.
We're back in the 80s. So both harvest numbers and spat set. So I'll pull up just, I think there was a question for Dan, and I think Tommy touched on it about where oysters are coming from. And I have it pulled up for the Rappahannock, and this is something I can do for other areas, but this is harvest in the Rappahannock since 2008 by area. So sort of over that, two rotation cycles, and this is an aggregate of where these areas are coming from. So this is when area one sort of switched to Patton Tongs, and, you know, we're on the sort of second full rotation of that, I guess, now. And you can see the breakdown of where harvest is coming from, with actually area seven producing more oysters than any other area over that time period. But again, area 7 or 8 have had some of the most replenishment effort, but again, they're in good condition as well, producing a lot of oysters. Area 4 and 2 were the sort of the next, and 8 are all sort of comparable. And area 1, which has always been a producing area, is the second highest, but again, a different gear type, no rotation, and no replenishment in these areas, in area 1, where all other areas have been replenished after harvest.
Yeah.
you have that by the year for last year?
I didn't pull it out just for last year, but I can make a note to pull out the harvest just for last year there.
I was just looking to get apples to apples comparison.
Okay.
You take 3, 5, 6, they've all really have not been open any magnitude since oysters came back based on their rotation cycle.
Well, I guess these are all in that 6-year rotation. So each one of the areas 2 through 6 have each been open twice, as well as area 4 now. So this
is what I'm saying. They weren't open every year out of that 6 years.
Right,
like
right.
And then 4 and 7 and 8, yes, it, 2 phenomenal seasons. Last year on 4 and 7 and 8, they had 2 phenomenal seasons in there. So that I was just looking to get it. In my mind, just how it compares for a season.
And I guess it would be, you could definitely compare each one of these by each season, but it would be sort of different, I guess, is what you're saying. But this is over the same time period with the same.
What I'm trying to get at is, I think we've estimated numbers we've heard here from what we bought, high numbers of boats in one, but just trying to get in my mind the number of oysters, the effort in each one of these.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the effort over the same time period. So
you're not following me, but what I'm trying to find out is what, get in my mind, what would the effort in one look like if you had put, what would that number look like if you had put the effort in it that you put in on 4 or 7 or 8 in one season?
I think we could show you the season number. I'm not sure you could get at that answer. Knowing
no,
what,
but I could get, it would help me.
Okay, okay. We could do a year by year.
We've got to do some interpolation, but, you're not putting the effort in one, even a fraction of it that you're putting in 4 or 7 or 8 or with the number of boats in there.
I guess it's the bushels removed is what the only thing we can really compare it to is the number of bushels that have come out over a time period and the condition of the resource. So there's not that I'm aware of a good way to show what you're asking there other than.
I just would like to see
numbers.
Talking about some of these rocks ain't open every 3 years to where one has been open every year.
Right.
But
I just would like to see what's been harvested.
Like Area 7 probably had 3 times as many boats as Area 1.
Mm-hmm.
But they were open 3 years, every 3 years.
And another thing, too, 16 bushels per boat is 16 bushels per boat, whether you're dredging or Patent Darling. But you put 60 or 70 boats on Area 1 Patent Darling, and you'll see the number go up, and just like you would if you worked the 7 or 4 in those dredging,
Mm-hmm.
I guess you nailed it. That's the point I'm trying to get to in my mind and look at.
I don't understand, Andrew. Help me. The harvest in this area since 2018, is that 2018 through 2022?
I think the best thing we ever did was when we split a lot of these boats up.
That includes the most recent season there. Yeah.
So it's a cumulative. And
Again, this is
2 open for a month each, I think.
Yeah. Right. It's definitely not saying that these have had the same amount of
effort.
Well, depends on how you want to define effort. Is they haven't been open for the same amount of time, but
if Area 8 has only been open 3 months in 4 years, And Area One has been open every year.
But you're just showing a gross harvest is all.
Right, right. This is the amount of bushels that have been removed from these areas over that time period. So it's the best sort of data that we have to compare.
I don't know, but if you put that whole thing in that area, you're going to kill it. I'll tell you that.
Well, I guess the point is these are the areas based on the current management strategy and how they're producing. Yeah. But you are right that obviously if Area Four was open to hand scrape every single year, those numbers would look different. But we haven't done that. So, and we can do it one year, but this is a snapshot of each area being open to those sort of rotation cycles over that 6-year time period.
And what I assume, I'm just guessing, if Area Eight had been open every year for eight for the last 4 years, if that number would be off the top of the chart.
All you got to do is go back before it started patting on it. That's all you got to do.
It would be hard to say. You couldn't say what these numbers would be if we did something different. All we can see is what these numbers are based on what we did. We can do that by year over 8 years. But obviously, if areas are open more, if people fish there, there's going to be more harvest. And again, that's that same time scale of what has been producing oysters and sort of gear types in those areas. And again, the Area 8 through 2 has been open to hand scrape, but in that same time period has produced 77% of the oysters. And then the areas that were open to tongs and oyster patent tongs, just Area 1, have produced about 23% of the oysters in that time period. So that's sort of looking at that by gear type rather than by area. And this is all gear types, all areas again. So the whole bay since 2018, sort of looking at that snapshot of where things are coming from. And
yellow and silver, maybe.
This is oyster patent tongs, and then this is patent tongs is yellow. Patent tongs is 12.
Okay, which blue?
Oyster dredge, so Pocomo, Tangier Sound.
Okay. And scrape it down.
Mm-hmm. And then.
You got to move that board closer for us. And
again, it's going to change season to season as part of it, so depending on different rotations. But this is the area going back to 2016, the percent of total harvest that has come from each one of these areas. So the James has been 41% going back just to 2016. So through the 2023 season, the Rappahannock has been 28, York 6, all others 10, the Tangier Pocomoke, that just got cut off a little bit, about 20% or so.
Looking at your data in past years, is that pretty historical for, or do we, is it even relevant going back years?
I think the James has always been sort of the most producing oyster. It's sort of what it's produced has kind of shifted a little bit over time with more seed. I mean, millions of bushels of seed used to come out of there, but most of that got planted on private, and that was reported when there was millions of bushels of private ground harvest. But I think if you go look at the last 14 years or so, it's probably about the breakdown. But there has been a little bit of a shift in terms of the last few years in the James and Rappahannock is efforts actually, or harvest, we can call it harvest, so we don't get bent around the axle on effort, has actually shifted. And there's been less harvest coming off of public ground in the James in the last 3 calendar years. So I broke this down into calendar years because it's a little bit easier to think of it that way sometimes in seasons. But you can see that in 2020, is really when a lot of that harvest effort or harvest amount shifted to the Rappahannock. So this last season or the last calendar year, we saw over 100,000 bushels of oysters coming out of the Rappahannock, which is the most ever that's come out of that in recent memory, I guess. Whereas the James used to be producing on public ground, you know, up over 140,000 bushels and only about 50,000 bushels or so in a year has been coming out of the James here recently. So that effort has been split up to other areas.
I think that's a strong point to the commission and to staff that we've been able to do that, because the one thing in my mind, when we reduced the harvest in the James, we're keeping that sort of in the bank, if you will, that we've got something to fall back on, and we're not, I mean, back 16, 17, 18, when we were forcing more boats in the James, we were working it pretty hard back then. So I think it kind of goes back to the strategy of splitting the boats up. I think it's really paying dividends.
And just so you can see there, sort of for a comparison, just to see where total harvest is coming from. I would do the public-private comparisons on other areas, but the James and Rappahannock are the two biggest, and you can see that the last 3 years, private ground harvest in the James has been increasing to sort of record numbers, but it's been stable and then gone up a little bit in 2022 in the Rappahannock. So, you know, just to have that number there. And just again, as the resource condition, this is the James River, and you can see the condition of the resource there has been relatively stable. We've kind of been working on this same really high spat set. The number of smalls have been going down a little bit, but the brown shell and the markets have been pretty stable the last 2 years. Just the smalls have been going down, and we haven't seen a huge spat set since 2018, really. And the Rappahannock, everything's kind of been trending up for the most part, with some smalls turning into markets, but we've had a recently higher spat set there. So that's sort of the comparison of those two areas. It's been pretty stable in the James, but harvest has been decreasing. It's been getting better in the Rappahannock, and harvest has been increasing. But again, Rappahannock is on a rotation. The James is open every year. And that's basically the information I have to sort of put out there, and then be glad to open it up to discussion or try to answer any questions or take some notes and come back. And I'd be glad to jump around to any slides that people want to see or go from there.
Can I ask a dumb question?
I can give you, only if I can give you a dumb answer.
I heard a little something about the Yankee Tank last year, but I ain't heard nothing more.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Is it off the agenda?
Well, we talked about it, and I guess there wasn't necessarily a need for it at that point. There was plenty of oysters in a lot of different places. Hmm?
So don't let them lay down and die.
Right. Well, this has been an area that we have as traditionally managed as a state replenishment area. So it's, Tommy was saying, it's an area that we could move some seed from if we need to, or we could, again, kind of look at exploring that as a managed rotation area. I think there was some discussion about, I don't know if there was consensus on the committee about what gear type and when it would be open and that sort of thing. So we kind of tabled that for a while, but it's something we can try to put on the agenda going forward. Or
late now, start with this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a damn shame to let that sit there and just die.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to take a look at it, you know, from market's perspective, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever we can come up with, you know. I think we probably needed this year because, you know, the available ground is, you know, one of the bad hit off years. So we'll continue to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. We also talked about opening Lawson Bay last year, and that got pushed off until this year. Has there been any more thought on opening Lawson Bay?
I know it had been mentioned there, yeah.
Yeah, so we just decided that there wasn't enough time to look into it for last oyster season.
Mm-hmm.
Table this year. Has there been any discussion on that?
No, there hasn't been any discussion on that yet. And Larson Bay that's a sanctuary there as well. So,
is it going to be a sanctuary?
Right now, it's not an open harvest area, I guess I should say. And there are some sanctuary reefs there.
Can it be changed?
It's not any different than any other area in the Rappahannock.
There's a sanctuary nearly every area in the Rappahannock. Are you open to opening Lawson Bay?
That's something we'd have to discuss internally with staff there. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I will say that there are more oysters today than there have been in 35 years. People are catching more oysters than there have been in 35 years. and I would caution any incremental approaches. And we did increase harvest by 50% over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the last time we harvested as many oysters as we are harvesting today, albeit the resources in a different condition, we were here discussing harvest restrictions and user fees. And then prior to the last time we harvested as many oysters as we are today, 2 years later, we were in the 1990s and you saw those graphs. So I think we're in a good condition. That's not apples to apples, but it's one of those things that we have definitely
set things up. Excuse the other way.
Mm-hmm.
If the oysters are going back and better not open it, then.
I would suggest, Andrew, that we've kind of got some measures in place. Like last year, we didn't hopefully reconvene in January to discuss how things are. So I think we have measures in place that weren't in place previously. It might protect opening something like Lawson Bay, because if we're doing a lot of damage to it, we'll close it down just like we did Area 4. So those safeguards are kind of monumental for the program.
But one thing we need to understand too is that we're doing it with less boats. The fleet is going down. It's not going up. We have less people oystering now than we've had in the last 10 or 15 years. So I think we need to realize that that's the trend is not because more people are getting into the fishery. It's actually going down, you know, but we're opening more area for longer periods of time, you know. We're basically oystering, what, 6 months a year now in the public season? So I think that has a lot to do with, you know.
And I think efforts have been
discussed this by our next August meeting. We can discuss it in August.
In terms of opening oyster sanctuaries?
No. It's opening Lawson Bay.
Lawson Bay.
It's a sanctuary then. I mean, it is a sanctuary, which you took care of Tom from us for a sanctuary. And I think you ought to give some back every now and then.
Mm-hmm. We opened up Middle Ground in the Caratomin.
Yeah.
Here recently there. But again, it's
you
one of those.
Caratomin Road. The rest of it away.
But it's a public ground, and it's only a sanctuary. Because it's not
I guess it's a closed harvest area. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
been
a public ground, it's also a public to use.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, is still a significant area there from the bridge down to Lawson's Bay? That's a sanctuary?
The area isn't open to harvest. There's some sanctuary reefs that were constructed there.
Uh-huh.
And then a portion of that larger area there isn't open to harvest.
That all came out of the original rotation, and if, I don't know if it's 10 minutes or what have you, but it was decided when staff took a chart and divided into six areas in that area that we weren't comfortable at the time with that size of the river. We weren't sure about the root stock and so forth, and we were going to revisit that in 3 years.
Okay.
How long ago was that? The discussion started in 1999. I would say it was 2002 or 3, something like that. There was a request of the Virginia Watermen's Association to open from the bridge down for Patentong, and that was denied. And then there was a request to open from the bridge down for scraping. At the time, we were only scraping from the bridge north, basically Area 4 and 5 now. And the compromise was a rotation that this committee recommended. And Lawson's Bay is not any different than any other. It has sanctuaries that would be protected and by code, and there are areas that would be open. It's a closed area. It's not a sanctuary.
Okay.
And then sometime along the line, staff interjected that because the Corps had done some work down there at Mesquite Point, we needed to continue to keep it closed, but it is
interesting.
And I'm not sitting here advocating for or against. I just
that's the history of it. Yeah.
That's exactly what was
wrong.
Does it have a history of harvesting before?
Yeah, my granddaddy worked there for years.
Yeah, I think if you go back to prior to the rotation strategy and prior to the 80s, almost the majority of areas were open every year without a rotation to select areas, and the management areas were allowed to dredge. Almost all other areas were patentong or handtong only, and that was a sort of different management strategy than we are under now, which is a combination of rotations, sanctuaries, and hand scrapes. So, it's a different time, I guess, in terms of management, and it's something we can look at the condition of the resource. We don't survey the entirety of Larson's Bay. We just survey the select areas there. So we can look at those numbers. I can pull those numbers up and show you what's there. But again, these are areas that I'm sure there's reasons they're wanting to be open, and there's people are seeing plenty of oysters there on the bottom when they're going over with, you know, getting good echo, and, you know, the sanctuaries in those areas are doing good, but also there are lots of other oysters in the Rappahannock, and the Rappahannock has produced 100,000 bushels with the areas and the rotations that we have now, and has been increasing. So again, sanctuaries or closed harvest areas, something we can look at, but again, I think I would urge at a staff level an incremental approach.
And I'd like to be on record. I'm not advocating for harvest in a sanctuary. And I don't, you know, I would. Certainly not.
I just think it's important to get as many areas available, whether we work it or not, you know, to have it so we can work this. Splitting up in a ratio of the fleet, you know, I think that's the most important thing that, that this fishery needs, and that's an option, and I think that's why we need to, you know, look at it whether we open it or not, you know, it's certainly something we could do down the road.
What I'm hearing, Jason, I just want to make sure, what I'm hearing is that the committee would like, I don't know, would like the staff to look at the possibility of putting that area in the rotation.
Right.
Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Yeah, at least available.
The asset of oysters is laying there. We've been patting ourselves on the back for the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're spreading the fleet out, reducing effort in the James River by moving to the Rappahannock and every which way. If there's another, I don't know what's there, if it's 100 acres more there, mm-hmm. it spreads everybody out that much more and takes some effort away from Area 4 or Area 2 or James River or wherever else that is there, and it's not a sanctuary, utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, beautiful to move that area is wintertime, northeast wind is just an ideal place where people can work. You know.
Well, that's something we can look at and come back and go back through the record and try to bring some information at least to have that ready for you all to look at on the areas that we do survey in Larson's Bay. It is a large area. I mean,
a lot of our state money that went there on the shelves they planted there, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks that go across the road and they end up going on the other side.
At least 3 miles
to bottom. All sides of the bridge, on the north side of the bridge, has a half a mile area. It was just as good as the upper side. It was worked years ago. Then the lower side was better than the upper side.
Mm-hmm.
I would, I'm assuming we're looking at possible ideas for 20 for this upcoming season, and I'm not sure how popular this will be, but I'd like to throw it out as the ability to limit the latent effort. Anybody that wanted to oyster was oystering last year. It was a good year. The market was strong. My question is for staff and for the committee. The committee is there will, and for staff, do we have the ability to cap latent effort that if you didn't season by season, that this upcoming season, if you didn't oyster or your license wasn't purchased by someone who was, you know, not looking for a license that was bought last year, but you know, someone that's been out of the fishery for 5 years and just not took advantage of, you know, is there a way as we make these decisions to cap? I'm assuming the latent effort is still the same amount as the boats working. Is that accurate?
Where are you putting that, Andrew?
We can pull up, but there's about 250 boats working, and I guess with the recent regulatory changes in terms of the transferability requirement shift that happened in January of, I guess it was December of last year, I guess it was, where we shifted to being able to transfer your license with 5 years of harvest history and 1 day of harvest per year out of those 3 years. Is that or a medical exception with 5 years of harvest history, a lot more licenses are likely eligible to be transferred this year. So if that's what you're talking about.
And what I'm looking at is, guess number one, I don't want to make decisions and then the fishery effort be double what we were anticipating. And number two, I don't want to penalize any working waterman in Virginia by holding something back, or when we have a discussion about a loss of bay or whatever, that I don't want them to be penalized by late an effort for someone sitting on the sidelines waiting. I don't know how to get much better, but waiting for something to get better or have no intention. I hate that number being up there. What it could do to the resource and also as a limiting factor to the fishery. So just asking the question. I'm not saying take anybody's license away. I'm just saying season to season, do we have the ability to look at the latent effort and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. If you didn't work last year, last 2 years, or whatever you want to do, the last 3 years, whatever, just someone that's kept that license for 20 years and never used it, that we don't have to use that as a matrix in making a decision on what we're going to do this year, and also not have it come back and penalize us with an extra 100 boats jumping in the fishery this year. Number one, the resource wouldn't take it, the market wouldn't take it, and it wouldn't be fair to everybody else that's built this industry to where we're at now. So.
Well, I think what we had before with the 40 days requirement made it so that there wasn't an increase in effort suddenly. We're moving that and going to 5 years. We no longer have that control as much as we did before. So there is that possibility now. There is an option for a regulatory change to be able to go back to something like that. But we literally, I guess, just made that change this last year.
I'm not looking to, I don't even want to talk about transfer of license. I'm just talking about the actual use of the license.
So you could have a license, but you can't use it?
For by a season. Maybe this year that we were going to, and where I'm getting is just this latent number. When we get to the fine tax of it, it probably won't come up tonight, and it won't, but when we get to the final commission decision, it's got to be a factor, is latent effort. And is there a way that we talk about that on the front end?
I'm not.
How much latent effort is it?
I think the last number was a little over 700 and so people eligible to purchase their user fee, and there's roughly 400 or so people the last few years that are active. So about 300 or so licenses, give or take, depending on the exact numbers. I think we can pull those up pretty quickly. Yeah, there's been consistent since 2018 when we made those changes, dropping that sort of third person. The effort's been around that 400 number.
Over the last 3 years, from 21 to 23, there's been about, we'll say 350 to 370 people active, which means there's about 400 to 430 people inactive. So it is a lot.
And what are they doing?
They're just purchasing their user fee.
Paying for seed to go up the Rappahannock. So.
There's got to be a reason for that.
At this,
and to your point of what's gone, we changed the requirements for transfer. That 430 people have had an opportunity to sell their license under the new regulation, correct?
That's correct, yep. They haven't necessarily had an opportunity to be active under that, though.
Can I ask you something?
Got it.
Didn't they have an age limit on that before they could sell it now? We did that.
The committee recommended changes to that, and the commission adopted changes that were not the committee changes.
But they've got to work 3 years out of those five to sell it, right?
That's correct, yeah. Or have a medical exception.
Questions for you, Andrew. So the first week in August, we're hoping to look at a proposed plan for upcoming season to present to the commission?
I'd like to try to come to some level of consensus with the committee on vote on a season that they would prefer in that August meeting there. Yep.
Is there any way, because I need a little time, because I don't know enough to have to study, is there any way we could get staff's proposal a few days before the meeting so we could look at it?
I think a starting place, absolutely, yep, would be similar to the 2021 season. So as sort of a minimum there that staff would be comfortable with and work on adjustments from there. So this is a similar option right there that we've done in the past. I think there's some room to adjust things around and maybe shift things. This is a pretty conservative season, but this would be a place that staff is definitely comfortable with here. And I think one of the things that did work last year, and I think everyone was a little bit more comfortable both on the committee level, on the staff side, was to start with a little bit more conservative than we may necessarily like as a collective group, and then to look at readjusting it later in the season.
That's the one you want us to study.
Yeah, and I'd be glad to sort of send out a draft with the areas in the rotation there as well.
It would help me.
Andrew, on the Rappahannock area 7, we had 2 months, I'm assuming, was the asterisk part of a month? Okay, so
yep.
We had 2 months with just off the cuff, just trying to get in my mind, how would staff look at only 1 month and 7 and 1 month and 8 like we've done the last couple of years? It seems to work well.
Yeah, no, I think that has been working well, rather than a longer 2 month season, particularly with both the spat set, the shell planting, and the seed has gone up there. I think it would be better to work each area a little lighter and split them up that way.
So this with 1 month and 7 and 1 month and 8. Mm-hmm. And possibly look at the possibility of an incremental or some sort of a conservative approach to Lawson's Bay.
We could definitely look at the data and discuss that. And again, that's one of those things that if everyone is still doing as well as they were, catching a limit in 45 minutes, an hour, finishing by 10 o'clock at the end of the seasons, with the rotations that we have now, and the resource still improving, it's one of those things that there might not be a need. But if spreading out that effort means we have to do less replenishment in some of these areas, then it might be a balance. But given what we've seen with scrape areas, it's potential that we might have to replenish another area in addition to what we are now, but it's something we could look at. Yep.
This is harvest ends at noon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In October, we changed it to.
Yep. This last season, we did have that noon cutoff in all months, but October, and again, October is still that warm weather harvest month. I guess real quick, so we have it here, we don't have to take a vote on it, but just for staff purposes, is the committee we discussed a little bit, and I know there was a little bit of differing opinion on the curfew being 11 o'clock for public harvest in October, or the cutoff time on harvest being 11 o'clock with the warm weather restrictions being noon. So is there any committee opinions on keeping status quo on harvest times from last year in October?
My personal experience, I worked 34 in October and November both, and I was getting a limit around 9:30, and I was traveling back over to Robinson's Creek to tie up. You know, I had loaded horses and put them in the truck and take them to Cricket Hill, and I just couldn't make it. And I thought I was, you know, getting my limit pretty early. It's a pretty good time crunch to make it at 11, I tell you. I mean, my personal, depends on where you top at. You come to Thomas and top in College Creek and you're working 34, I mean, but everybody can't top. And, you know, that's a problem. It's the geographic locations of where the waterman has to top at.
But I guess from the warm weather perspective, we can't really change, or we wouldn't recommend changing that noon curfew. It's really just that 11 o'clock harvest curfew.
Yeah.
my thing with the 11, particularly in October at the start of the season, is it, you know, eliminates the law enforcement was really on the ball. What I saw at the beginning of the season last year, monitoring, but you take out the ability for someone to double dip.
Yeah.
On that 12 o'clock thing. We still have pretty warm temperatures in.
This year, for persons, if you open six, then everybody on the duck farm and Orlando side will be early, and I mean, everybody from Coleman side will be later, because they're, I mean, it's not their fault to run across the river, you know, but.
No, and the buyer can send, I mean, in our case, we can send a refrigerated truck from here to Orchard to come in, I mean,
And just so folks know, is really, as soon as those oysters are on land during warm weather harvest months, they need to go into a refrigerated truck is ideal. So that's really by the letter. They should be refrigerated in October. In November, you can carry them to a refrigerated facility, but in October, they should be land-based transport should be aboard a refrigerated truck.
That ain't what we went by last year, Andrew.
Well, I'm just saying how the regulation reads. It's,
I mean, I put a lot of time in this last year,
mm-hmm.
a lot of discussion, and you know, it was agreed that everyone, that as long as your oysters were covered under a protective wrap, did not have to be in a refrigerated truck to transport to the buyer. Is that what y'all understood?
Yeah,
and a cover on. Yeah, and a cover on. You know, I mean, that's the way the rule was originally written, but that's not the interpretation that came out of it.
Well, I don't want to. I don't write tickets, but the law is that.
I went through the law.
I guess the key point from a public health perspective is they need to be under refrigeration by noon, and that's what we need to make sure we're doing. Transport.
So what does the woman do that don't have a buyer to come pick the horses up? How you gonna get your horse? I gotta go buy a refrigerated truck to transport 8 bushels of horses.
Even that, of course, your buyers
in
a refrigerated truck like everyone else does.
That should, yeah. I agree.
The main concern in the land-based transport from a public health perspective is if you have on October 1 a 90-degree day
mm-hmm.
and your oysters are in the back of the truck and not refrigeration from 11 to noon,
mm-hmm.
those oysters can get pretty hot. Whereas if they're on the water and they're wet, it's going to be a lot cooler, and that's again, the most important thing, and there's always some discretion on enforcement, but that's how the law is written, and that's the reason for it.
Refrigeration by noon.
It's fine in November and
October. Mm-hmm. Don't ever consider in the summer months.
You can get a permit by code to do that up to an hour before sunrise.
You can.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that anybody does that, but I believe there's a code section that allows, with an exception. I'm not sure. I don't issue the dredge permits, but I believe there is an ability to do that.
Permits for an hour, but the regulation is 30 minutes before it comes.
I guess the public season is different, so that's for private dredge permits there. But for not, there's, I don't think staff would be supportive of any prior to sunrise dredging on public ground.
We want private ground. It would sound like this, but the common sense, keep the oysters out of it.
I can't say if any permits have been issued like that, but
I'm looking at the sun. I look at what it says on the clock. You know, I mean, 30 minutes sooner. To me, it doesn't make sense. If everybody's concerned about people getting sick on oysters 30 minutes before sunrise, you can see what you're doing. No problem. Now, as far as public, they can be a little bit different, but I don't understand it. Because like me, I can be loaded by 9:15 to get a shank tag at 10.
Well, that's something that I think we'd want to.
You just don't even go to work.
Any discussion on that? We want to make sure we tech to law enforcement first before we make a decision on that. Again, that's the main concern.
Something considered, you know.
Mr.
Chairman.
Just lastly, going back to people thinking about coming back to the next meeting, this was one of the years we didn't have anything open in October when we really struggled. Any thoughts to maybe like we did last year? I mean, it's, we all know what the oyster market is right now. And in the November 1st, you're slated with Alabama opening up, Texas opening up. Louisiana's going to have a season this year for the first time in multiple years. So I, again, I feel, I say this every year, but I feel strongly about us getting in the market with the oysters ahead of people. So in October.
It really helps.
Great.
I agree with you, Tommy. It really helps us out as Virginia to get a foot in the door in October. Too much competition in November.
I guess a question for the committee in terms of area openings. I think in previous seasons, we've had the James River open in October early, and given the effort or lack, or we'll call it harvest, the harvest has come out of the James. I know there's different marketability, different oysters, but I think Cody may have mentioned the box market is still strong with James River oysters. Is there a preference on area given the rotation we are in the Rappahannock on what areas or a area is preferable to no area?
October.
In October. Mm-hmm. I know everyone will love Area 7 open for 4 months and oysters nonstop, but we can't do that. But in terms of James River,
wouldn't want to,
right?
Is the 2 weeks we took off of Area 4 with the condition that looks like a possibility? I mean, obviously, the further up the river we go, the better the oysters will be as far as, which given only having six, we really don't have much to monkey with there. I mean, but it's just something for staff to.
Well, looking back at some of the seasons, we have made minor adjustments in the rotation before, so it hasn't always been hard and fast, and that's something that we could look at as a short season out of rotation or.
And maybe by doing that also, we could capture a little bit of data on, you know, we didn't get far on our 2-year rotation discussion. I still feel very strongly about shorter 2-year rotations than I do longer. A bigger 3-year, but at least if we did that, it's not, we're not per se, we cut 2 weeks off of what we had proposed last year, and we could, when we go back to that rotation, on a normal rotation, we will have a little data on what it looks like, having had some effort on that.
I think that's something we can look at. I always like to put things all together and see how it spreads out, and I think we've said it before, and I think we've agreed that as long as there aren't whole month standalone areas, that's the, I think, what we've been successful
at. Thinking when you said James River, kind of dovetailing that into, because of what we saw when we split that season last October for James River, that all the guys that were working private lease in James River stayed in James River, and all the guys that were working private lease in, you know, Rappahannock or Comic or whatever, we're on that end of the bay, and we have both seen both state came, you know, Jukatuck and the Danceman's private boats and all. So to your point, it works well, I think, when you don't have a standalone, because if James River's open by itself in October, Rappahannock, you're going to have the whole fleet.
Now that sounds like an option. And then one thing I wanted to run by the committee a little bit is, you know, the York River has in some years produced a lot of oysters, and I think the Hantong areas, I'd be glad to point those out and sort of the number of boats that have worked there, but those areas have been pretty consistent. The Hantong area in Aberdeen Rock there, and a lot of the boats last year, again, depending on the day, anywhere from 12 to 20 boats out there consistently. We're also working in Pages area, so that's the area that would be on the rotation. I guess I think Peyton's our resident Hantonger up there. but I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on what, whether you'd like to see pages go back into the hand scrape rotation or look at keeping it in hand tong and opening up another area out of rotation, such as the mob jack, which we've had some concerns about there, that again is in as good condition as it was. That would be, to your point, Tommy, on a 2-year rotation versus a 3. So just looking for input there.
That's a subjective answer that gives me a lot of trouble. I'd love to see it open the shaft on, but it really depends what's better for the resource and for the market. I think you gotta work towards the market. It's great in this powerful shaft on bottom, but the shaft on fleet up there is 12, 15 boats maybe. And if it could service a better need by servicing 60 boats, then I'd say open it for that.
One thing lastly, or two things. The the good thing about October too is we'll have boats doing other things. Hopefully, there'll still be a crabs and a decent crab market, I would hope. But and then back to the Lawson Bay thing, just not to leave anybody thinking. Andrew made the point. Lawson Bay is a huge area. When we originally drew up, it was not a standalone area. It was basically a portion of it was included in Area 2, and a portion of it was included in Area 3. So it's I don't necessarily advocate for that being a standalone area. It was part of other areas. It was not when the decision was made with Roger Mann and Jim basically saying it needed to have a couple of years to see how everything worked out. That was not all open at one time. It was looked at that it was going to be part of 2 rotation areas.
And I guess I'll draw a rough line on there, but I'll see if I can share this for folks here. Let me see.
Does that make sense to you, Andrew, knowing that how big that area is?
Yeah, no, it's a pretty good sized area there for sure. I'm not sure.
Short of it, Andrew?
Yeah. So it kind of runs from sort of point to point right here. Let me put the public ground on there. And sort of along this edge right there. So everything offshore is open and everything inshore. So it's really this is Larson's Bay here, and it's a big flat. They do anchor some grain barges there. There are some small sanctuary reefs sort of in this area. But it's, similar bottom type to what you're seeing up off Coratoma there, but we don't survey the whole area.
From the bridge down to that first point, come back to your left, that's a sanctuary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming further to the left, right down, that's all sanctuary, right?
The Rappahannock Worcester Heritage Project, basically all these sanctuaries that we have were going to be set up with harvest areas around them. And that was how we originally started. So every one of those areas had sanctuaries in it.
Okay.
And then, like I say, when we got down to the, there it is, when we got down to the tax, that area, I can't remember exactly, but somewhere between where the cursor's at and the bridge, there was a diagonal line that separated 2 and 3.
Okay.
And a portion of it was in rotation area 3, and a portion of it was in rotation area 2.
Okay.
And then when we got to the end of it, we drew a line from basically where he was just at to the
Mosquito.
From Mosquito Point back up on, back up there, that
where the cement is,
that we decided to give it a cycle and see how things worked out.
Mm-hmm. And this is sort of, there's some of that reef material here. I think those 2 points that we don't survey because it's a larger bridge piling.
That was that's where they dumped when they reconstructed the bridge in the 90s. That's basically where they dumped the decking that was.
Mm-hmm.
That's down towards Key Point.
The Emery Rock, I think, is the name of it.
And it might be an option to sort of look at leaving a chunk around that area and that sanctuary area there, and maybe some of this edge down there. Again, it's one of those areas that if you look at the historic shell going back there, there's some there, so it's likely, again, we don't survey all those areas, but it's something that we could look at. And maybe potentially look at surveying this fall, before we just go harvest on it. It might be more prudent of us to actually get a better feel for the resource prior to harvesting it rather than after harvesting it.
And check it next week.
I thought I had this just food for thought also was that it could also be used as a patent home area.
Mm-hmm.
To start off, if you decide to look at it, it could be worked in. It's really working well for the market and for Virginia to have this extended season from October until April. We've got oysters on the market all the time. It could work in as an area that you can patent on for a month or whatever. Just think we've got to be careful going in it, but it's a good area.
January, February, when the willows fade.
Well, that would give us enough time to sort of survey the area in the mm-hmm. fall. And I think on a staff level, definitely not committing to anything, but you can come out with us in the fall if you want to count a waste here. We'll put you to work. Correct, yeah.
Law enforcement did a very good job in that area. It was getting surveyed back when the oysters first came back and it's a private ground insurer there, and they did a good job of mopping it up, but it was getting surveyed. I mean, it's a prolific area.
Now, I guess usually when folks want areas open, they already know what they're going to get to a certain extent there. So you can definitely mm-hmm. see stuff. You see lumps along all these edges when you go over looking at the sounder there. So see an oyster rock come up. But something we can look at there. And I guess the other question was mobjack in the rotation, out of the rotation. Any thoughts on that? It did produce oysters 2 years ago. I don't think there hasn't been a desire to replenish it, but again, it's been kind of maintaining its spot where it is there.
Didn't we vote not to put anything outside until?
But we haven't, yeah. And we moved 10,000 bushels of seed oysters off there and then opened it to harvest, and it's in better condition than it was when it was scheduled to be open to the rotation without moving anything.
Well, I don't see why it should. I mean, if you wanted to open it, I don't think anybody would object to that. I think the objection was steady pouring money into it and getting nothing out of it.
Mm-hmm. That might take some pressure off other areas as well.
I guess it was 12, 15 boats worked a couple of weeks, I think, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know J.C. West worked.
Yeah.
Still some stuff left there.
I'd like to say I appreciate us having this meeting earlier and starting staff. I mean, we've come from the days where we were making a decision before the commission meeting the following Tuesday to know what we were going to have to staff starting this process a couple months earlier.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Okay. And
Mr. Commissioner, I see you here. And
he snuck up on me. No.
Deputy and Deputy Chief, so we appreciate this conversation.
Now, and again, I think the good thing is we have a good starting spot, so this committee and this commission has done a good job setting the table, and I appreciate everyone's time here. And I've got some due out there, so to look at some of the year-by-year harvest data in the Rappahannock, we can look at that latent effort, potentially come up with some options there or some solutions. Look at Larson's Bay and sort of come up with something on that. And was there anything in particular data-wise or anything that folks would like to see other than sort of having a draft season put out in the relatively near future? Anything else that?
Maybe just an update on what missing team.
On the fat set-wise? Okay.
And then I wear Dan, look at adding a month and 7 and a month and 8.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, Andrew, I want to say, that, you know, I appreciate the fact that the first week in August is only a couple of weeks away, and we've given you a puzzle with Pete Grant, my puzzle here, puzzle. So appreciate the work that you have in front of you, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, to Tommy's point, it's better on staff and everybody to have a little bit of time before we have a public hearing. So, and I appreciate everyone's willingness to come in today and then come back and see us again.
But I got one more thing. I got one thing.
Let me get Dan here first. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Just quickly, I know last year when we were after the extensions, you know, we got the Tangier sign, and Don, you know, the Texas Islanders wanted Irie, like I think Irie and Nolan open for the extension because it hadn't got worked much. And I remember, if I'm remembering right, you said if we open it now, there's no chance of it being open for a little while for next season. Is there any shot of that happening? You know, Irie and Nolan getting open. You know, for whenever, I'm just throwing it out there, but I'm in for whenever, like, Don and them boys would foresee it helping them more.
You might have beat Don to the punch. I don't know. He's a...
Oh, sorry about that, Don.
Yeah.
I'm saying any time. Beatless Bay, are we still on board? Putting that in this year's rotation and taking it off the Shell Rock rotation.
Mm-hmm. That's something we could look at. I'll add that to the list there, sort of delineating that and maybe having like a month sort of overlapping or adding it to start out with to sort of look at that, or talking about the full 3 month rotation there.
First thing we're going to have to do is establish a line.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at it. I mean, it's your job to do what you want, but I think Bernard Bar Beacon to the end of Bar Point, Sandbar Point, whatever you want to call it, that would be a good line. I mean, somebody to see that. So
we can draw an invisible line, but having something with a few landmarks is usually a good idea. Yeah.
Better, you know. Mm-hmm. 9 and 10. You need to put the seed up there, and the two loads that went into Beasley's, that was, I mean, look, we appreciate everything you do, but that seed was not very good. Everybody, you know, said there was probably as many oysters there when they left as what they called that up on 10. Or, yeah. Let me get it right now. 9 is the upper part, right? 10's.
Right, right. Good.
9 on the upper two loaves that you planted, they were good. But, you know, we can't get shells there,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. Now, we won't be any shells in there because it's too shallow. I don't understand why we just don't open it up. I think it's going to do more good by dredging it between the shells up that's on it. And just with take the seed money, you put it to like dogfish and shells. We're getting more into shells right now than our seed's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my thoughts on it. I don't know how you feel waiting on it, Tim, but as far as I'm concerned, if you can't put shells on it, I am a great believer that when you turn shells over, you get spats. If you don't plant shells on it, you're not going to get any spats. It's going to sit there and just silt over. I don't understand. I mean, to me, I think it's better to dredge it if we can't put anything on it. As far as hand tonguing in the public milk saying, nobody wants to do it.
There are a couple boats catching a limit there.
Yeah,
a couple.
Yeah, I heard all about the limit, but I'm not going to say anything. But anyway, there's only like two. The effort's not there. No one mm-hmm. wants to do it.
Well, I think, I guess, a couple points. I understand you on Beasley Bay, and the problem with 9 and 10 is right that we can't plant shells there, and there really aren't any shells in any kind of quantity to turn over there anymore. So when we do the survey, I can show you those numbers there. It's different with the dredge. Is you can fill up a dredge with shell, but there's not enough shell really on those bottoms, except on the areas where we put that seed to support much. You have little pieces here and there. So I guess if you remove all those oysters and stop putting everything back, we've done that before, I guess, in area 9 and 10, where we took almost everything that was there, opened it up, and we didn't get very good spat sets on Shell Rock. I'm not saying that's the reason for it, but bat start up here and probably work their way down the sound. So I think it'd be good to leave something there. We do have that new sanctuary area that we built along the line, and that's probably a little bit more of a, we actually have a sanctuary there established, so that might be some comfort, but I would be cautious about just planning on taking everything from that area, dredging it, and expecting there to be, it to do better after that. We generally don't see that happening, but definitely more options in terms of having a, another short season there. 9 was the one that they were asking for the extension on, and that's in better shape than 10, which had more effort at the beginning, and that was the one that was open, I think, in November last year.
Do you, would you consider opening one of those up in the middle of November?
It's something to look at and think about, but it's this year. You might want those oysters more in February if some of the other areas are starting to get worked down, but again, it's probably going to be pretty decent this year. So.
You may consider opening up. Dan, you listening?
Yeah.
You wouldn't consider opening up Tarifa for 2 weeks, would you?
I would. I would rather open up Kiali, Don. Surfer, there's a lot of surfer that didn't get worked, but what got worked, the surfer got worked pretty hard. Kiali only got worked during the extension, and that was only like 6 or 7 days. And I actually had this discussion with Andrew yesterday. I would actually like to throw something like Kiali out there during the time that if Area 9 was to be open, throw Kiali out there with it. So that would split, you know, that would combat the one standalone area. Kiali's oysters they're going to die. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were huge, and it only got worked during the, you know, during the extension, not even the full extension.
I don't think, actually, both rocks in danger are saying. Only like, what, 4, 5, 6 boats on it all winter, everybody's in the Pocomoke.
I think we did extend those areas already by 2 weeks, I guess, and we haven't resurveyed them since. So they did have, what, 17 boats, Dan, is that right?
Yeah, that's what we had, 17. During the extension, I don't think it was too many from Saxes that come over. I don't know if Don might have a number on that. It weren't like it was the Shell Rock, nothing like. I mean, I'd say at the tops with us and with them, I'd say tops 30, 35 boats on the best day. We had some bad weather and during the extension.
Probably about 10.
Well, probably about 20. It was 17 of us. And like I said, Kiali didn't get worked at all. If your survey shows a whole lot different than what it was beforehand, something's wrong, because Kiali did not get worked hardly at all. And I would say let's do Kiali instead of Thurford just for that aspect of it.
Yeah, we haven't done a resurvey and post-harvest survey in Tangier, so we haven't seen that, but again, something that I can look at discussing.
Unless they died in over the summer, from that date.
Mm-hmm.
Even last day, I was 8:30, I was going in, and Tangier saying it's not the best place to work.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, rough.
And again, I guess I know it sounds like a broken record, but we've had this last year, just to get some of the areas back and build on them a little bit. You know, 120,000 bushels of shell has gone into just the Pocomoke Sound, and we haven't had to plant any in Tangier for a reason that we don't need to. So that's always the
main thing I'm concerned over.
Well, yeah, but there ain't been no money made in Tangier Sound. Not last year. I mean, any amount. Thurfer got worked a little bit, but Kiali didn't get worked at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get the aspect of, you know, let's not spend the money, but there's also another aspect of, well, can we make money?
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, it's what, $17,000 to $20,000 in dockside value to Tangier alone every week of oyster harvest season. So it's people's incomes. I think it's around $17,000 just in that. Can do the math on whatever the market price times 17 times 16, and that's supporting Tangier economy right there. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody working, I don't blame them. I wouldn't work with Tangier saying this attitude, you know. Mm-hmm. But the guys on the shore, when you open up something December 1st, sometimes it's crab season in December 1st, and when you have to come over here and stay in a hotel and eat out, that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I suggested that year. 10 to bushels a day per person, 4 day work week, because it would have helped us a lot. But, you know, that's the part I get. I mean, everybody tells me, you know, why are we starting December 1st? And December, January, and February in the worst months in the worst bodies of water in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get it all the time. You know, just, I got private grant. I'm not in that shape, but I do. I feel sorry for us six guys.
Mm-hmm. I think, I guess, historically, that's the worst times of the month for anything other than oystering. So save them for then.
Everybody tries to plant it out so you can have oysters all year long. I understand that. Mm-hmm. We were just asking for something like a couple extra weeks.
Well, I think I heard Beasley's California and Area 9 looking at maybe 2 weeks. That could be something they all are open concurrently, and that might spread out that effort there and keep any one area from being opened up.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. I do too. I second that what Don said.
It would help the effort on the western shore too. Cut down
a little bit. You know, if we're not over here, we're there, spreads everybody out.
All right. And feel free in the interim to send any emails, give me a call. Glad to talk to anybody anytime. I'm usually pretty good about answering the cell phone, but always leave a message if you don't, and I'll try to get back to you. So.
Andrew, I didn't ask public comment. Ben, you got anything? David, you okay?
Yeah.
I know you got something on your mind.
I didn't tell Mr. Kellum I was keep my mouth shut, but I shot deep rock horses and
yeah.
And they're fat in November, December, January. And they normally get a little poor in February.
You can have my portion of them.
and I asked Chris Sacco about the shucking. He said Area 2, deep rock, and all shuck the same.
Okay.
So just
to. All right. Thanks. Okay. I guess anybody else got anything else?
Yes. Mr.
Commissioner, would you like to say anything?
Where is he at?
Are we adjourned?
Scarlett called me out. I asked her that. I was just going to say I want to thank staff, Andrew and Adam, for putting this together. And I like the idea of doing it earlier rather than later and keep that up. Get kind of, you can build a plan towards and being open to not necessarily having a final decision when the season starts and see how the season goes and see how all the results come back from all the stock assessments before you make a final determination on what extension you might make. But I do appreciate you guys' time, and I hope that we can get you some more information when the August meeting comes, right? Before the meeting.
All right, thank you.
Andrew, can you even send us through the email this presentation?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I'll send you a blank season slide there too. I think I've done that before, and you know, pick your adventures type. All right. I don't have anything else. If there's any other business or.
Okay. What was you doing during?
Sorry? You're waiting all night to hit that one.
It's been 20 years, but yeah, you know, we want to redo.